Hey, babes, I'm back. And that means another episode of the podcast is heading your way. This time, I'm introducing you to David Richards. And I want you to all pay attention because, yes, there is the main miracle story in this episode, but then there is an Easter egg with an additional magical, miraculous, mysterious, amazing, delicious event after the outro. Be sure not to miss it because, as the story demonstrates, synchronicity, magic, and beauty abound. Now, David is an interesting guy. And, you know, many times I get on these calls, I don't know this person. I know nothing about them. They know nothing about me. But sometimes I just click with the guest. And that's what happened this time. Our conversation was seamless. It was easy. And David and I got into it. And the result is something of beauty. David's had an interesting life, and I'll let him tell you all about it. But it was his miracle story and his NDE, his near-death experience, that captured my heart. And I think it will capture yours too. And interestingly enough, multiple guests I've interviewed lately have been telling these stories. So you know, for me, that means we should all pay attention to what they're telling us. That death is an illusion and that the soul is real. But don't listen to me about this. I mean, please, I'm just the host. Let's listen to David and hear what he has to say. So here's my interview with David Richards.
Way I remember it is David, the oldest one, said, "It's time to go home for dinner." And they lived a few, five or six houses down from where we were. And then my brother and I lived a block away from that. Danny got really upset. He didn't like that. And his face just went red, like it just filled up with Kool-Aid. I mean, it was just that quick. And so his brothers start trying to calm him down. They're approaching him, and there must have been a hammer on the ground at his feet. So Danny picks up the hammer, and his brother, Matt, his middle brother, just shouts, "Run!" And so I'm assuming we all turned to run. I turned to run. I remember there was this wall of green bamboo on the side of the house separating the yards, and hit me in the back of the head, and I was out.
I wanted to ask you, you had this incident when you were six, where your best friend hurt you. Yeah. And if you want to talk about that a little bit, do you think that that event changed your brain, in essence, and opened you up to this, understanding quantum physics, understanding the beauty in the world, understanding the love? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm curious how you understand that event.
Yeah. So I'll go into it a little bit. And actually my best friend at the time, this kid named Danny, we actually exchanged emails for the first time this past January. We hadn't spoken probably in 47 years. And I just reached out to him because I said what happened actually was the beginning of my journey of faith, really, was like that incident. So I said I grew up on military bases, and military bases are very safe. And you just think about it inherently, it makes sense because everyone's working for the same company, the U.S. government, and usually the same service, branch of the military. And so it's almost like a throwback to what you might imagine the 1950s in the United States could be. Like just this sort of, no one locks their doors. You play with, the kids on your street. It's very communal, very safe. And also you've got your own military police. Tons of weapons and tanks, so it's not like there's a lot of crime on a military base. For kindergarten through third grade, we lived out in town. So we lived in the civilian world, so to speak. in a town called Hyattsville, Maryland, just outside of the University of Maryland. And it was wild because obviously on base, all the houses look the same, and off base, not, they look completely different. Like it's wild. And my dad, this was the mid 70s. So the Vietnam War was just winding down, not a popular war in the country at the time. And there was kind of that presence in the atmosphere, at least from what I can remember. So Danny was my best friend. He had an older brother who was 3 years older than him, who was same age as my brother. So we inherently just naturally became friends. They had an older brother, David, also his name, who was 12. And this was in the age well before helicopter parenting. So as 6-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 12-year-olds, we would roam the neighborhood. Like we were just out and about. And Danny had, he used to go into these fits of rage. Like he would have, you might call it a temper tantrum, but when parents aren't around, it's a fit of rage. And sometimes we called him a spaz. And sometimes it would get so bad that his brothers would have to physically restrain him until he calmed down. And you never necessarily knew what was going to set Danny off. So one weekend, or I guess it was probably during the week, I think it must have been during the summer, but it was in the afternoon, we had found our way into a stranger's backyard. And there was some construction going on in the house. Again, this was the 70s. So the fact that we were in someone's backyard didn't really matter. We were kids and we're not going to be intimidated or stopped or anything. But there was construction in the backyard. And the way I remember it is David, the oldest one, said, it's time to go home for dinner. And they lived a few, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 houses down from where we were. And then my brother and I lived a block away from that. Danny got really upset. He didn't like that. And his face just went red, like it just filled up with Kool-Aid. I mean, it was just that quick. And so his brothers start trying to calm him down. They're approaching him, and there must have been a hammer on the ground at his feet. So Danny picks up the hammer, and his brother Matt, his, you know, middle brother, just shouts, run. And so I'm assuming we all turned to run. I turned to run. I remember there was this wall of green bamboo on the side of the house separating the yards, and hit me in the back of the head, and I was out. And the next memory I had was waking up at my house with my mom there. Danny and his mom were there. Danny had been crying. He gave me a coloring book. The memory that I had put out from that experience didn't come back to me until the pandemic, until the first few months of the pandemic. And it was, I remember watching Danny's oldest brother, David, carry my body down to their house. And it wasn't like he was running. He was just walking and my body was in his arms. And Danny was on one side and my brother was on the other side and Matt was there. And I was about 15 feet behind them. And it was a very gloomy picture. And I just couldn't get back into my body. Like I knew that was my body, but I couldn't get back into it. And I put that memory out until the pandemic and then realized, oh my gosh, I had an out of body experience when I was 6. Like, how do you comprehend that as a child? You can't. So absolutely, because after that incident, I became more moody. I became more temperamental. I had trouble concentrating in school. And that showed up mostly with the sciences. Like I wasn't good at physics, chemistry. I struggled with math until I got to college. Creatively, I was on fire. I loved comic books. I loved Star Wars. I loved Dungeons and Dragons. I got something published when I was in high school for a short story. My poetry won contests. I could draw. But there was this tremendous imbalance. And I think when I, you know, coming back from Okinawa and having the sense that I wasn't fully present in my life, that's what led me to meditation. I used to meditate even on active duty when I was in the Marines. And then even though I don't think that I was consciously planning on it, that's what led me to yoga as well, which ultimately then led to quantum physics. And that was, for me, the bridge between the science and spirituality that was lacking for a good part of my life.
Don't you find it fascinating that kind of this memory shows up during the pandemic, kind of when you needed it to understand other things?
Absolutely. Well, and that's why I was, that's why I reached out to Danny. I went to a Tony Robbins event. If your reader or listeners are familiar with Tony Robbins, he's a huge entrepreneur, billionaire now, but has spent his entire life helping people increase their performance and quality of life. And I went to one of his events in December, and part of one of the exercises you do is, who can you reach out to forgive them? And I don't know that I'd ever blamed Danny for what happened, because I just knew these anger issues were just a part of his identity at the time. But that prompted me. I said, when I get done with this event, I'm going to reach out to, I'm going to find Danny and just say, hey, thank you. And for me, I mean, the pandemic was, I think a lot of us went through some psychological challenges, spirituality, if you believe that. For me, it was my dark night of the soul. It was me. What do I really believe? How do I bring that belief? How do I invest in that belief within me? And to come back to that incident, it really did. Oh my gosh, I had this experience when I was six. I remember it vividly. And then I remember how I needed to almost apologize to my friends. Like, I was still the same person, by saying, oh, you know, the doctor said it missed my brain, whatever that meant. But I felt like I had to come up with some sort of story to who I now was, because there was no way for me to explain what might have been missing from me after that incident. So when it happened during the pandemic, it was a huge wake-up call for me to get serious, not even get serious, but just to reconcile, okay, how do you embody what you believe? Like, how do you get to this point in your life and say, okay, this is what I believe, whatever that is, and bring it into my being.
And create more love. You know, I mean, yes. Before you reached out to Danny, you had no idea how he'd understood or integrated this event in his life, because certainly many people would look at it and say, you know, after the fact that you were okay and that you were healing and what have you, right. You know, it's just kids being kids. But kids sometimes, you know, it was probably horrifying for Danny, and they internalized that stuff. And so I'm guessing, I mean, that your email probably meant the entire world. And it's so important to understand that with an email or with words, or even just with a gesture, you can change someone else's world, yeah, irrevocably in all the best ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was great. I think I first found his wife's email. And so I sent her a note and I said, hey, this is who I am. I was friends with him. This is what happened. I just wanted to thank him for this experience, because I can look back on it now and say it changed my life. And then she wrote me back and said, Danny remembers you. He's going to reach out to you and send you an email. So we talked, we had a couple of email exchanges, and he was, you know, I'm so sorry about that. I'm like, we were kids. But I wanted to reach out to close the loop for me, and also for you, in terms of whatever you may have felt. I know it was beyond your control in that moment, because you were just dealing with your own childhood challenges.
Did I tell you, or did I tell you, that this week's miracle story was going to be extraordinary? And what's really exceptional for me is that David remembered what happened after he was injured by his friend years later. And that does happen. Sometimes our brains protect us from those memories that might hurt us. And it seems like that memory came back when David needed it most, when he needed the affirmation that this world is good and that his soul is real. Because how can anyone ever go back after having that revelation? Well, the answer is you can't. And so you kind of have to go out into the world and into your ordinary life, knowing that this world is truly an enchanting place, and that you and me and all of us, we're all enchanting human beings. I need to thank David for this conversation and for being so funny and cool and easy to talk to, because he was all of that and more. I want to thank all of you for listening to the podcast. And you know, right about now, I'm going to say, please, if you listen and you like what you hear, go to the platform of your choice and give me a rating, or maybe write a little review. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like David. I mean, honestly, if I would have had that revelation after decades and had that memory after decades, I might have freaked out a little bit. I might have thought, oh my gosh, am I going insane? Am I mad? Has the world turned upside down? But not David. David didn't do this. David knew. David knew that it was an affirmation that God is real, that spirit is real, that magic exists, that miracles happen. And he's unapologetic about it. And that's what I appreciate about him. He's like, I have this story to tell. You can take it or you can leave it. But here it is. Proof that the soul exists. So be like David. Be unabashed in your belief in magic and in miracles. And go out and tell people. Go to the mountaintop and shout it. That magic is real. That miracles exist. And that each and every one of us is enchanted, this world is enchanted, and that each and every one of us is a sacred human being here in the world, creating good works and making the world a more beautiful place.